Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show. Let's get personal about the news and the culture. As always, we do this every Sunday live on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem. Shout out to all the underdogs that come along for the journey every week live. And of course, a lot of you get to listen to the show also during the week because it's a podcast. With that said, if it's your first time joining the show, what you're in for is a special mix of politics, culture, and personal development stuff for underdogs. And when I just want to say it in a shorter fashion, I just like to say it's a special delivery of underdog stuff. And a quick disclaimer, especially if this is your first time tuning into the program, this ain't CNN. This ain't Hot 97. This ain't MSNBC. This ain't Fox News. This ain't the New York Times. The Wall Street Journal. Not that there's anything wrong with those things. But they cover, and they often commentate about what's going on in society and culture. But here at the Gregory Neesmith Show, we like to get personal about it. So let's get personal about underdog stuff in society and culture. And to take you on that journey every week, you have your host, Gregory Neesmith. And I'm an entrepreneur. I do some other things. But when it's all said and done, I'm really into spreading special stuff to underdogs and really committed to how do we explore some of the unwritten rules of society, of side hustles and life so that we can go from underdog to being champs together and along the way, hopefully support each other too. With that, that's enough about me. What about you? So let's go on this journey together. Today's topic, I don't want to give it away yet. I want to share something first, and then I'll let you know what the topic is. Start with this, and maybe you can relate. I want to share a little bit about a past relationship and my future aspirations of a relationship. My past relationship with this woman who will remain nameless for right now. It was sometimey. Sometimes I would see her every week. Most of the time it'd be every 2 weeks or so. And she was complicated. Shoot, the relationship was complicated. What are those buttons on Facebook you get to put single, in a relationship, where it's complicated? Well, my relationship with her, it was complicated. And I felt like I was always working for her. 24/7. But it never seemed like she was working for me. And I try to do better. Try to learn from my parents and what they've done in these same situations. But you know, my parents only know but so much, even though they're always doing the best they can. And this woman would even do some things that would get on my nerves sometimes. Little things, like use words that I just don't understand. Like, couldn't you just say things where I could understand you using all these complicated words? And there were some tough times. I would often blame her for things that I did, but I blame her. I'd say she was the root of my evils. I've even lost friends and family over her. Can you relate? You ever been in a relationship like that? Or am I the only one? Now, I do wish that things could be different, right? Hopefully I'm not defined by my past relationship. In the future, I'd like to find somebody where we both want more. Where we both look out for each other. Sometimes I work for her. Sometimes she works for me. We work for each other. I want it to be a partnership. I'm hopeful that she'll be here now. And even when I'm old and retired, wouldn't that be awesome? Being able to enjoy the moment, but also know that they'll be there for a lifetime. That's what I would want, but that definitely isn't what I've always had. It's mostly been some timing. It hasn't always worked out. That's the answer to the question. What's your answer to that question? My bad. I haven't told you the question yet, have I? Well, the question I just answered is that of, if money were my significant other, how would I describe our relationship? If money was figuratively a person, what would that relationship be like? What has it been like? What would I like it to be like in the future? That's what I was just describing. And as we go on this journey today, I'd love to hear from you, underdogs, and my people out there. If money was a person, what's your relationship been with money up until now? And what would you like it to be in the future? Also, throughout the show, I'd love to hear what are some of your memorable quotes about money. Some stuff you learned over the years. Some stuff you learned that you still believe in. Some stuff you learned that you might want to unlearn. Why am I talking about money? Well, January is new you, new me, new us month, right? New Year's resolutions. If you listen to the show, you know how I feel about New Year's resolutions in January. I'd recommend that you try something else. But that's what January is all about. February. Come on now, I shouldn't even have to tell you what February is. Black History Month. March, who runs the world? Shout out to the women out there. It's Women's History Month in March. But did you know what April is? And I'm not talking about the April showers that bring May flowers. And I will say in advance, my bad for not bringing up what April is sooner. My bad for having a show where we talk about underdog stuff and the unwritten rules going on in society, side hustles, and life, and we haven't really talked about this subject much. And that subject is money. And guess what April is? Financial Literacy Month. It's a month-long effort to highlight the importance of financial literacy and teach Americans how to establish and maintain healthy financial habits. It was officially recognized in 2004 when the Senate passed a resolution to make it official that April would be the month that we make sure we pay extra attention to how much we know about money, personal finance, how literate are we about it. And so, if it's true that, as Malcolm said, education is the passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare for it today. If it's true, like Ben Franklin said, that an investment in knowledge pays the best interest, we can't have a show for underdogs and not talk about money, and especially during Financial Literacy Month. So we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about it. And I'd love to talk about it with you. How would you describe your relationship with money up until now? I told you mine. Sometimes shows up every 2 weeks. I'm always working for it. It's complicated. She uses words that I don't understand, but that's not what I want. I want money to be a relationship where we work for each other. It's a partnership. It's there for me now, and it's there for me in the future when I retire. I don't want it to break up my relationships with my family and my friends. What's your relationship with money been like? And yeah, we got to talk about it, right? Got to pay to play. Speaking of sayings that are memorable that I've heard over the years, you got to pay to play. Costs money to do a lot of things. You know, we talk politics here. Do you know how much it costs to run for president on average of the United States? Let's say if you or me wanted to run in 2020 and get rid of Donald Trump, it costs $400 million on average to run for president. but yet we ain't talking about money enough. Oh, by the way, it costs about between 100,000 to 1 point something million to pay hush money to porn stars too, but we won't go there today. But if you just wanted to run for the House of Representatives, it costs about $10 million. And if you add in all the outside money, it costs about $19 million. But yeah, we ain't talking about money that much. But it looks like we need it if we want to play in this game called politics. Who has a family out there? I don't have a family yet. I want a family. I want to get married, have kids. It's reported it costs about $233,000 on average to raise a kid from the time they're born to they're 18 years old. But yet, we ain't having conversations about money. Average cost of buying a home in America, it could be 120 something thousand in West Virginia, or as much as a half a million in Hawaii. And wherever you live, underdogs, probably somewhere in between. Everybody wants to potentially go get a degree, go away to college maybe. It's not the only way, right? There's trade schools, there's other things, but there's a lot of folks, underdogs out there that want to go away to college or might be in college right now. $34,000 to go to a private college a year. $10,000 even if you go in state to a public university. And that doesn't even include books, housing, supplies, personal expenses. But yet we ain't talking about money. Shoot, even if you just want to go on a date, average cost is about somewhere between $45 to $100. You still need money even just to go be social and find love. I talked about my relationship to money, but if you're talking about just relationships in general, you got to have money just to go out and date. But yet we ain't talking about money, and that's my bad. We've been doing this show for over a year, and we haven't talked about this topic, so we're going to change that today. So we're going to talk about today, what's your relationship to money? What are some of your memorable sayings about money? More money, more problems? It sounds good in the song, but last time I checked, no money equals more problems, not more money. And what's your belief about yourself when it comes to money? I know mine's is sometimes that I'm not special enough to get paid for what I do. Or sometimes I say to myself, I'm not a good person if I charge them for that. Or sometimes I say things that are almost like a hating on myself. I say things like, I'm not worth full price. Yeah, let's get into it. Because rarely is it ever about the money. It's normally about other things. Confidence, scarcity, commitments, power. It's never about the money. So let's talk about it. But we're going to talk about it today. And so far, I've shared that if money was a significant other, I've talked about what my past relationship has been with her and what I would want my future relationship to be with her. Also, what are some of your favorite or most memorable money sayings? More money, more problems? I mean, it's not really true, right? More money should actually equal less problems. Money's the root of all evil. Is that true? Or is really people can be evil? And then lastly, I've been just trying to figure out what's your belief about yourself when it comes to money. I got some ones that don't work for me. Like, I'm not special enough to get paid for it. Or sometimes I say to myself, I shouldn't charge full price. Or I'm a bad person if I ask that person to pay me money for something. Maybe I'm the only one who sometimes has a bad relationship with money. Maybe it's just me. But it's not. I know. And then there's a financial literacy test that we're going to take together. And then I'll talk about some ways that we can all get better with our money. But we're talking about financial literacy and the fact that, you know, it's financial literacy month. And as underdogs, we get to talk about it. But unfortunately, we don't all know that much about financial literacy.
When we look at how much people know about the very basic concepts of financial decision making, we see that people know very little. The situation that was highlighted as well during the financial crisis, where we saw that people were engaged in contracts that they did not understand, and also that had very important implications on their balance sheet, and many people defaulted on mortgages that they could not afford. If there is a good sign, a good part of a financial crisis, is that it has certainly raised the attention on these important issues about financial illiteracy. This is not just a problem of the U.S., it's a problem that is going global.
Yeah, financial literacy seems to be an issue not just in America, but around the world. This woman, Anne-Marie Lazzardi, who has studied the topic of personal finance and financial literacy for years, came up with three questions. These three financial literacy questions have been shared across surveys and research for years now in the U.S. and around the world. And we're going to play the financial literacy game together. See if we can get these right or not. Three questions, just three. Are you ready? Ready. Three financial literacy questions. The first one. Suppose you had $100 in a savings account and the interest rate was 2% per year. After 5 years, how much do you think you would have in the account if you left the money to grow? I'll read that one more time. Suppose you had $100 in a savings account and the interest rate was 2% per year. After 5 years, how much do you think you would have in the account if you left the money to grow? Four choices. You'd have more than $102. B, you'd have exactly $102. C, less than $102. Or D, do not know. So A, more than $102. B, exactly $102. C, less than $102. Or D, do not know. Let me know. Write down your answer. Question number two. Question number two of three financial literacy questions used around the world to get a gauge of how financially literate we are. Question number two. Imagine that the interest rate on your savings account was 1% per year and inflation was 2% per year. After 1 year, would you be able to buy more than, exactly the same as, or less than today with the money in your account? Read that one more time. Imagine that the interest rate on your savings account was 1% per year and inflation was 2% per year. After 1 year, would you be able to buy more than that, exactly the same as, or less than today with the money in this account? Four options. A, more than today. B, exactly the same as today. C, less than today. Or D, don't know. Write down your answer. And then number three, the final question from Ms. Lazzari's financial literacy test. Been used around the world, tested amongst thousands, millions of people to get a gauge of our financial literacy. Question number three, do you think that the following statement is true or false? Buying a single company stock usually provides a safer return than a stock mutual fund. Buying a single company stock usually provides a safer return than a stock mutual fund. A, true. B, false. C, don't know. Write down your answer. Doom, 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 doom. That's my attempt to hum the Jeopardy theme song. But with that said, let me know what your answers are to those three questions. You can post them on the Facebook Live at facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith, or you can call 212-650-6903 and let me know your answers. That's if and hopefully I can get the phone lines to work so I can answer them and you can be on the show. Now, I will give you a heads up that only about 30% of people got all three of them correct, which means if you didn't know or you end up getting one or two of them wrong, it's all good from the standpoint of that's actually normal. 70% of people only get none, one, or two of those three questions right. And what happens is those numbers seem to be similar around the world. Even in well-developed countries, including the U.S., financial literacy has some distinct differences. And unfortunately, oftentimes it's found that those who are older, those who are women, those who are African Americans, those who are Hispanic, those who haven't gotten to reach high levels of education, and even those living in rural areas in America oftentimes have challenges when it comes to financial literacy. And it's not about attitude. It's not about aptitude. It's not about intellect. It's oftentimes because we haven't been exposed to. We haven't been talked about to. We haven't had the opportunity to learn it. Because if we learned it, we would do it. We would be able to show up and show out like we always do. But it's oftentimes an access and education gap, not an aptitude gap. With that, are you ready to hear the answers to the three questions? Have I built up enough of the suspense? All right, here we go. Back to the three questions that assess financial literacy directionally. First one, if you had $100 in a savings account and the interest rate was 2% per year, after 5 years, how much do you think you would have in that account if you left the money to grow? More than $102, exactly $102, less than $102? The answer is A, more than $102 because of this magic thing called compounding interest. That $100 would make $2 in the first year. And then that $102 would then have 2% more interest added to it. And then the following year, another 2% added to that and added to that. And the money, the compound of the interest means you have more, definitely more than $102. Number two, imagine that the interest rate of your savings account was 1% per year and inflation was 2%. Would you be able to buy more, exactly the same or less a year later? And the answer is C, less than today, because your money made 1%, but the cost of everything called inflation went up by 2%. So now you have less spending power. And this question is more of a assessment of how we get to understand inflation and the time value of money and things like that. So that's number two. And then number three, is it safer to invest in a stock or in stock mutual funds? Now, you may think you're Mr. Know-It-All and that you can bet everything you got on this one company. And right now, I wouldn't bet on Starbucks, given some of the stuff that's happening with them in my hometown of Philadelphia. And more on that to come. It's not easy being black in America, and there were some issues with a Starbucks in Philly over the weekend, and hopefully as more news comes out, we'll get to the bottom of it and folks will be dealt with properly for their misconduct. But with that, you don't want to invest in just one stock. The answer is it is false to buy a single company stock and believe that it'll provide a safer return than stock mutual funds. And this is about diversity, right? It's about not having your eggs in one basket. Ever heard that saying? Don't put all your eggs in one basket. You pick one company, one thing goes wrong, all your money gone. You pick a bunch of companies, you get to, like, you know, weigh things out. Some will do good, some will do bad, some will do in between. But overall, you got a better shot of things working out when you have a collection of folks, a collection of companies as opposed to just one. All right. Let me know, how'd you do on the test? It's all good if you didn't get all of them right. Only 30% of people got them right. And it's not because the questions are, like, extremely hard. It's because most of us, me included, I don't know, do you remember having a personal finance class when you were in elementary school or high school? I know I don't. Shoot, when I went to college, I remember there were accounting classes and economics classes, but I don't remember anybody specifically teaching me about mortgages and taxes and balancing checkbooks. There was no financial literacy class. I don't hold it against you or myself that we might not have done so well on this test, but we can do better going forward. And that's because supposedly
the really good advice is can fit on a 3x5 index card and is available for free in the library.
What did he just say?
The really good advice is can fit on a 3x5 index card and is available for free in the library.
Hold up. You mean to tell me that is financial literacy month. And I've talked about my relationship to money in the past and what I wanted to be like in the future. You know, in the past, it's been sometimey, shows up every 2 weeks, always working hard for it. It's complicated, uses words I don't understand. It's broken up relationships with my family and friends. That's the relationship I've had with money. The relationship I want with money, if figuratively, if it was a significant other. Sometimes it's good to role play things out. If money was a significant other, that was the past. The future, I wanted to be where we're in a partnership, where money is with me now and in the future and when I retire, that we work together. And sometimes I don't even have to work for it. Sometimes it works for me. And yet, money's involved in everything, right? If you want to have a different president, if you want to run $400 million, that's all you need. You want to run for the House of Representatives, you need $19 million. You want to raise a kid, that's just one, $230-something thousand from the time they're born to the 18. Money shows up all the time, everywhere. Even if you just want to go on a date, still got to have $40 to $100 or something like that for a date. And my bad, we haven't talked about money enough as we explore some of the unwritten rules of society, side hustles, and life here, get personal about the news and the culture. But we're going to talk about it today. What's your relationship with money? What are some of your memorable money sayings? And if we want to really go down, go deep, what do you say about yourself when it comes to money? I know I got some things that aren't that empowering. Sometimes I say to myself, I'm not special enough to get paid for it. Or sometimes I say, I won't be a good person if I charge them. Or maybe I'm not worth full price. And I bring that up because the theme of today's show also is that it's never about the money. And some of those things I say to myself, it's more about how I see myself in the world, not necessarily about the money. And I do know that if I change my thoughts about myself and money, it can be a step towards changing what happens with me and money. And now we just found out there's some ways to see how financially literate we are. Three questions. I asked them. You answered them. It's okay if you didn't get them all right. Only 30% of people got them right. And not because there's anything wrong with you or with me. We just haven't talked about it enough. We maybe haven't been exposed to it enough. But we'll talk about some ways that we can get our financial literacy game up. Because it's important, right? I remember being younger, and oftentimes people would ask the question, would you rather be wealthy or happy? And now I know that question was often asked because given where I grew up, given my family background, that I should probably prioritize being happy because wealthy is something that was unlikely to be attained. And I don't want us to have to live in a world of either or. I want us to be able to aspire to be happy. And even if we're not wealthy, to at least be taken care of. Right? To have a living wage. To not have to worry about if you're going to have a roof over your head or food on the table. And unfortunately, that's a lot of the struggles of a lot of underdogs out there. But let's get into it, right? Supposedly, this guy, and I'll tell you who this guy is, says this.
The really good advice is can fit on a 3x5 index card and is available for free in the library.
What? We'll talk about whether that's true or not. And then I'll also share my top 5 tips for how to get better with money. It's April. It's financial literacy month. Let's get into it. One of the things that I love about what we do here every week is that we get personal about underdog stuff in society and culture. And as much as I love to share what's going on from my perspective, one of the pillars of the show is that you get to share from yours. And one of the ways we do that is, Mr. Telephone Man, there's nothing wrong with your line. When you call 212-650-0069, I pick up every time. And normally that is true. But today, that's not true. It seems that the phone lines are down and the audio is not picking up from the board to the sound to then get out to the rest of you. So it looks like we will not have one of my favorite parts of the show for the last hour, which is your phone calls. But I appreciate Barry and Asha for both attempting to call in, and you put a smile on my face. And I know you had stuff to share with the underdogs out there that they wanted to hear. And so I am sad and frustrated that I'm not able to get you on the air today. With that, we've been talking about it's never about the money. But it does feel like it's about the money sometimes. I kicked off the show talking about the relationship I've had with money. If money was a significant other, what was that relationship like? It's been some time. It's been every 2 weeks. If I'm lucky, that's when I see her. She makes me work for her all the time. She's broken up relationships between me and my family and my friends. And she's complicated too. And she'd be using words that I don't even understand. Like hedge funds, municipal bonds, derivatives. But that's the relationship I've had. The relationship I want, if money was a significant other, is one where we're in a partnership. Where we work for each other. Where I can count on her to be around today and even when I retire. And that we go out and we can do good together. Because it's about us, but it's bigger than us two all at the same time. And that she actually allows me to bring out even the best in me so I can then also give that to the rest of the world. That's what I would want my relationship to be. And we talk about politics and we talk about activism. We talk about family. We talk about the culture. And all those things warrant being talked about on a show where we talk underdog stuff. But as Barry said during the break, it's also about the reciprocal relationship we have with money and how money can work for self and how it's important for us to know what beliefs, what emotions we have tied up in money that work for us and the ones we have tied up in it that don't work for us. I know it ain't the sexiest topic sometimes. I know we could talk about Trump today. Shoot, we could even talk about money and war. We could. I mean, you know, I'm ready to talk about that if we choose to.
The U.S. happens to be the biggest arms supplier in the world. The U.S. has supplied countries like Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt with complex weapon systems, even as their governments have been blamed for committing human rights abuses with those weapons. The thing is, the weapons industry is big business, worth $85 billion worldwide. U.S. companies, including Lockheed Martin and Boeing, sold more than $23.7 billion in arms last year to nearly 100 different countries. The majority of U.S. weapons exports end up in Asia and Oceania, although the Middle East received 32% of all exports in 2014. And because domestic sales have declined in recent years, U.S. companies have all the more reason to look abroad.
I could talk about that. And Mr. 45 telling us that he thinks the mission was accomplished in Syria. I could talk about that sometimes presidents do stuff abroad when they're having tough times at home. But that would be only covering and commentating about the news. And I could talk about some of the recent tragedies that have happened, right? Execution style murders of folks like Stephon Clark. Racial profiling, like what's going on in Philly recently at a Starbucks, I believe at 18th and Market or 18th and Chestnut. And more information is coming in about that. But I also know that, as one of my mentors once told me, love isn't enough to build a community center. Love isn't enough to have the movement keep going. We also get to organize money too, and organize each other. And so if it's true that one of the most revolutionary things you can do in the world is start, build, and create a family, well, one of the things that's a part of that is being able to provide for it. And so I wanted to talk about money today. Because even in the culture, January celebrated new you, new me, new year. February, black is beautiful. Black History Month. No way we going to not know that's happening. In March, it's hard being a woman, which is why we give them a whole month. They're literally over half of the population. But it's hard. So we have March for Women's History Month. But then nobody told me that April was Financial Literacy Month. It is. And nobody told me that most people couldn't answer three questions about financial literacy. Suppose you had $100 in a savings account and the interest rate was 2% per year. After 5 years, how much do you think you would have in the account if you left the money to grow? Number two, imagine that the interest rate on your savings account was 1% per year and inflation was 2% per year. After 1 year, would you be able to buy more than, exactly the same as, or less than today with the money in the account? And number three, do you think the following statement is true or false? Buying a single company stock usually provides a smaller return than the stock mutual fund. Three questions asked year after year after year for decades in the U.S. and around the world. And 70% of us got zero, one, or two of them right. Only 30% of people got all of them right. But I don't say that to make me or you feel bad, because it's not because we don't have the attitude or aptitude to know these things. Oftentimes, we haven't been taught them. We haven't talked about them. And it's especially important to talk about it, because oftentimes, that 70% that struggle with those questions and understanding compound interest and inflation and investing and risk and diversification, it's been the underdogs, right? Women, black folks, the old, Hispanics, folks who may not have been highly educated. And not highly educated in terms of financial literacy, because guess what? There's folks who got PhDs who struggle with money. I heard a survey said the other day that 1 in 4 Americans who make between $100,000 and $150,000 can't come up with $2,000 in cash in 30 days. So even those who've quote unquote made it still struggle with financial literacy. So supposedly, Harold Pollack says this.
The really good advice is can fit on a 3x5 index card and is available for free in the library.
All right, so supposedly Harry Pollack says this finance money thing ain't that complicated. He's widely known for this idea that there's 9 simple money rules that can fit on one index card. I was intrigued. Harry Pollard. I'm like, is that simple? 9 things on a card. That's it. We cool. You show me. I get that and I'm going to be better. Like, it's all good. Personal finance. Financial literacy. Check. On an index card. He has 9 rules. I'm going to read them. And I encourage you to go Google Harold Pollack. And that's P-O-L-L-A-C-K. And he was recently in an article titled 9 Simple Money Rules on One Index Card. And those 9 rules, he said, were max out your 401k, buy inexpensive, well-diversified mutual funds, never buy or sell individual stocks, save 20% of your money, pay your credit card balances in full every month, maximize tax-advantaged saving vehicles, like 529 accounts, which I believe are related to college savings accounts, Roth IRAs. Number 7, pay attention to fees, avoid actively managed funds. Number 8, make financial advisors commit to fiduciary standards. What that means is basically make sure that your financial advisor, if you have one, is committed to telling you what's best for you, not selling you stuff that's best for him or her. And number 9, promote social insurance programs to help people when things go bad. And I was like, cool. Those are 9, good things. But they assume that I think folks have reached a certain level of security, a certain level of wealth. And while they may work for some, I know they don't necessarily work for all of us. And so I was like, what would be my top 5 things related to financial literacy that I thought would help the underdogs out there? And I'd love for you to share your tips on how you navigate this thing called personal finance. Because while they say the saying of more money, more problems, I'm here to tell you, and I know a lot of you can relate, I think it's when you don't have enough money, you got more problems. And so I want to share my top 5 things I've learned about getting better with my money. And hopefully you'll share yours too. Shout out to the 215 checking in the 212. Daryl says on the Facebook Live that he has a principle that he believes in. Pay yourself first before you pay your bills. And what Daryl's talking about, this whole idea of if you're going to save money or invest money, make sure you look out for yourself first before you send your money out to all the other places that may have to go. And so I think that is a good one that Daryl says, because you'll always have your bills. But make your investments. If you're lucky enough to have a 401k at your job, and especially if they do a matching amount to the money that you also put in, that's also put in before it's taxed by the government, do it. Do it. Daryl also mentions mutual funds, which we talked about, right? Mutual funds are likely less risky than just picking individual stocks. And over the long run, they perform pretty well. Obviously, past history is not indicative of future results, but you likely have a better shot at things working out with some mutual funds as opposed to just picking one or two individual stocks. Shout out to Daryl. Also, shout out to Asha, who attempted to call in earlier. Asha Davis, appreciate you. She's going to share about her relationship to money. Hopefully the phone lines will be fixed next week and we can get Asha along with Barry on the line. And Barry was talking about the reciprocal relationship we have with money. He also mentioned that the spring equinox is coming, and that this is a time of the year when we get to really be mindful of the things going on in the world. The things we get to do in it are often, there's more magic in it when we're attempting to do something that's bigger than just ourselves. When you're living in a we mindset instead of a me mindset, an us instead of I. And the same thing happens with money. I know life is different when I'm not saying to myself that I'm not special enough to get paid for that, as opposed to I'm saying to myself, how can we win together? How can we profit with purpose together? Remember cooperative economics? Money's not inherently good or bad. It's our relationship to it. It's what we do with it. My top five things I do to have a better relationship with money. Five of them. I'm going to share mine. Daryl has shared one of his. Please, if you're following along online, share yours. And if you want to share by calling, I can still pick up the call off the air, and then I can relay your comment to all the underdogs out there on the air. All right, my top five. Number one, don't listen to me. That's one of my top five principles of how you can get better with your money. Don't listen to me. This ain't my lane. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not an accountant. I'm not a Wall Street trader, stockbroker. Don't listen to me. But start talking to people who know more about money than you do. And if you don't have any friends that's their specialty either, that's all right. You can start by listening to shows or watching programs that this is what they do. So, for example, on Fridays from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., you can tune into WHER 90.3 FM, The Voice of Harlem, and listen to The Ash Cash Show. And listen to the financial motivator himself, Ash Cash. And that is his lane. And this is what he talks about. And as underdogs, I know that you can get with him and his message and some of the things he talks about helping folks get their mind right and their money right. And he's a big believer that financial freedom is our only hope. There's folks like the Budgetista. Google these folks, Ash Cash. Google the Budgetista. Google wealthysinglemom.com. Don't listen to me. But start talking about finance. Start talking about money. Start following, connecting with, reaching out to people who know more about it than you do. And I just gave you a couple people that you can start to listen to. Now that being said, I'm not going to like totally play myself here. Like, I know a little something about finance, but it's not my specific lane. I do some investing, both in companies and in real estate. I've led some teams and businesses both locally and globally around the world. I'm a landlord and do some other things like that. But like I said, don't listen to me. There's people out there, this is what they do. Talk to them. Number two, new relationship. I talked earlier in the show what my old relationship was with money, and then I talked about what I want the new relationship to be. Underdogs, take a moment. And I urge you to do it today if you can. To figure out what your old relationship to money and then what your new relationship with money is going to be. Because it's never really about the money. And Barry, during one of the breaks, said this too. It's about some of the emotion we have related to it. It's about some of the experiences we had growing up with it. Figure out what your old relationship is to money, your old blueprint, and then start to get a new one. And actually, if I go back to number one, which was don't listen to me, I mentioned Ash Cash. I mentioned the Budgetista. I mentioned Wealthy Single Mom. Also, check out the book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. They talk about some of the ways that the wealthy relate to money and to themselves. Actually, one of my favorite ones of the 17 rules of a new blueprint for this whole idea of The Secrets of a Millionaire Mind. One of them is, instead of thinking about either or, think about both. So number one, don't listen to me. That's one of my top five tips for getting right with your money. Number two is get some new relationship. That's right. You got an old one. It's natural to have an old one. But what's your new one going to be that works for you? Because it's never about the money, really. It's about your relationship to money and to yourself. Number three, get a budget. Like I said, personal finance ain't my specific lane, but leadership development is. And one of the things I know, that it's hard to figure out where you're going if you don't know where you're starting. And so get a budget. How much you're spending and how much things cost in your weekly or monthly life. What's coming in? What's going out? Get a budget so you know where you're at. And then you can start to figure out where you want to go. Number four, being creative has helped me before when it comes to money. I know, creative, money, creative doesn't necessarily sound like a normal combination of a sentence or phrase, but seriously, when I first moved to New York, I was committed to saving money to eventually buy a place. I wanted to have a condo. I eventually ended up buying a studio condo in Port Chester, New York. But when I say creative, what I got creative about is the fact that I wanted to have a nice place to live, but I also didn't want roommates. And then at the same time, I'm committed to saving money for a place, but normally having roommates is one of the best ways to save some money on your monthly apartment expenses. But I got creative. I actually found a room rental in this lady's house. She happened to be going through a divorce. They were like loaded with cash. They had this big house, and off to the side of the house was her home office plus these rooms set up for people to stay in. And so basically I had a room rental. My room had a bed, a little twin bed, a chair, a fridge, a microwave, and a bathroom, and a door to its entrance. And I had that room rental for 5 years. Being creative when it comes to money. Having a room rental meant I didn't have to have a roommate. The setup had it where I had my privacy. I was only 5 minutes from work, so I didn't need a car. And I made that sacrifice also because I just didn't want roommates too. But I got creative with money because I was committed to something. And so I figured it out. You get to be creative too. For some of you, creative might be living with a family member for a little while you stack some cash. Be creative. And number five, while you're going on the journey of getting better with your finances, one of the things that's worked for me is to negotiate. Negotiate almost everything. What's the saying? Most people don't get what they deserve. They get what they negotiate. Someone offers you something, it's rarely their best and only offer. When's the last time you tried to sell something to somebody? If you were trying to sell, I'm making it up, a cell phone that you're getting rid of, and if you know you want $100 for it, do you tell people off the bat you're selling it for $100? No, you tell them you're selling it for like $120, right? Because you want to give yourself some wiggle room, because if they take it for $120, like, yes. But if they want to negotiate, you're like, you know that you'll drop it down and like, oh, you're willing to go down to $100. So guess what? You don't even offer people your best offer. So don't think that other people are offering you their best offer or only offer either. So while we're going on this journey to become more financially literate, and doing all these things, 401ks and this and that and all the stuff that we may not even know what they mean, there's some initial things we can do. And one of them is negotiate. And that's my top five. Don't listen to me. That's one. Listen to people who, like, this is what they do. Google Ash Cash. Google Wealthy Single Mom. Google Budgetista. Google Secrets of the Millionaire Mom. Number two, get a new relationship. This one might be the most important one. Take some time today and sit down and think about what's your old relationship to money and what's the new one going to be. The old one might be something like, I never will have enough. The new one could be, I'm a money magnet. Something like that. Number three, get a budget. You don't know where you're going if you don't know where you're starting. Get a budget. Write down what's going in, what's going out. How much you're making, what you're spending. Number four, be creative. If you're committed to something, you figure it out. I've seen folks get to Beyonce and Jay-Z concerts that cost hundreds of dollars. I've seen people figure out how to get the new Jordans. I've seen people figure out a lot of stuff. They get creative about it when they really, really want it. Be creative. I lived in a room rental for 5 years. Drove an 88 Cutlass because it was paid for a long time. Being creative. And number five, negotiate. The first offer is rarely the best offer. You don't get what you deserve. You get what you negotiate. What are some of your money tips that will help you go from underdog to champ when it comes to this whole idea of your relationship to money? It's April. It's Financial Literacy Month. We explore some of the unwritten rules of what's going on in society, side hustles, and life. And I say my bad that we've been doing this show for over a year now, and we haven't really talked money. But we're talking it today. I'm going to take a quick break. Check out the Facebook Live comments. And while the phone lines aren't working, hopefully I can listen to some of the callers during the break and then relay your message to the rest of the underdogs. More of the Gregory Neesmith Show after this break. Welcome back to the Gregory Neesmith Show. It's a special mix of politics, culture, and personal development stuff. But sometimes I just like to call it a special delivery of underdog stuff. And shout out to all the underdogs and my people who've gone along on the journey so far and for riding with me during a episode where we've had some technical difficulties. But difficulties, challenges come up in life, right? And we just keep going. And I appreciate all your energy and support. Shout out to Barry who just called. You know, we've been talking today about this theme of it's never about the money. Is it? You sure about that? It feels like it's about the money sometimes. Isn't the money the root of all evil? Come on now, Gregory. What you talking about? More money, more problems. No, it's never about the money. It's oftentimes about power. It's oftentimes about confidence. It's oftentimes about commitment. It's oftentimes about bad experiences. It's oftentimes about our relationship to money. But it's never really about the money. Shout out to all the folks following along on the Facebook Live. I believe we have a comment from my special woman, Miss Naveen. Shout out to you. And she comments, thanks for the insightful and helpful tips. A book she likes that she believes is standard reading is called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I 100% agree. One of the things when I said one of the tips for me is don't listen to me. This ain't my lane. There's people out there, that's what they do. You should listen to them. And she's right. One of the great books, or one of the things that as underdogs we can do, is that when we don't have necessarily the family or friends around us that may know or have expertise in some of the things we're interested in, there's ways to get access to things. And books are one of the great resources, right? And they're free. You can go to the public library. And as Naveen points out, you can go check out the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad by, I believe it's Robert Kiyosaki is the author. You can go to the library and for free, you can check out Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by, I believe, Harv T. Ecker is the author. You can go on YouTube for free. And Google Talks from Ash Cash, or Google Talks from the Budgetista, or Google Talks from Wealthy Single Mom. It's out there. You can go get it. And I know cost is sometimes a barrier, but in this case, some of these things are actually out there for us, and they're free. Daryl also agrees with Naveen and says, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is an excellent read. And he says that in all caps. That book changed my life. It was one of the books, that along with Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, were two books that in my 20s started to get me to rethink things. Like rethinking, is buying a home a good investment or not? And it turns out it depends. Especially today, when there's all these complicated adjustable rates and 7+1s and 1+5 ARMs, and it used to be save for 10 to 20% down payment, buy something within your means, live in that house for the rest of your life, it appreciates in value, and it's one of your bedrocks of wealth and something you can pass on to future generations. Well, that ain't how it goes now these days. But Rich Dad, Poor Dad helped me start to put in perspective some things about money that I didn't even know and some things I knew that I got to unlearn. And it was free. That's what's even cooler about it. It was free. Shout out to Daryl and shout out to Naveen for checking in online and going along on the journey today. I appreciate you. What else? What are some of your tips on how folks can get better with their money? It's April. We talk about January, new you, new me, new year, and that gets all the publicity. We talk about February. Black is beautiful. It's Black History Month. March is Women's History Month. But nobody told me that Financial Literacy Month is April. But we're going to talk about it. What books would you recommend? Which websites would you go to? Shout out to Barry, who called during the break. One of his tips is give your money a second chance. Give your money a second chance. He says you aren't perfect and neither is your money. And what I love about this idea of what Barry said, give your money a second chance, is really what he's talking about is give yourself a second chance. Because in that spirit, it's natural. It's normal for me at times to believe that maybe I'm not special enough to get paid for what I do. There's nothing wrong with me for sometimes thinking that maybe I shouldn't get full price. It's natural to have moments of doubt that maybe I go, ooh, if I charge my friend for that, maybe I'm a bad person. But Barry says I get to give myself a second chance. I get to give money a second chance, and I get to have a new relationship with it and with myself and with others. What are some of your memorable money sayings that have stuck with you over the years? What's your relationship with money? I talked earlier in the show, if money was my significant other, I described what the past relationship was like and what I want the future one to be like. And then also, lastly, to me, the most important question, what's your thoughts about yourself when it comes to money? Because that's the place where, as Barry would say, we get to have a second chance. Shoot, if you need a third or fourth or fifth, you get those two until you get it to where you want it. With that, I'm going to take a quick break. I can't believe it. Somehow, 2 hours is almost up, and we're coming down the stretch run for the big finish to the show. Shout out to all the underdogs so far who've been following along online and those who have been attempting to and working around things to follow along on the air and have been calling in during the breaks. Appreciate you. You know what we do here, special delivery of underdog stuff on the Gregory Neesmith Show. Time for the big finish to the show. But first, just a recap. We're talking about money today because it is Financial Literacy Month. That's what April is all about. It's a month-long effort to highlight the importance of financial literacy and teach Americans how to establish and maintain healthy financial habits. And man, do I need that. And maybe you do too. Because it's definitely an area that I'm still constantly trying to figure out. And I will say, my bad. We've been doing this show for over a year now, exploring some of the unwritten rules of society, side hustles, and life so that we can go from underdogs to champs and support each other along the way. And we haven't really talked about money. Shame on me. But we're talking about it today. And it's important because oftentimes black folks, women, the elderly, those in rural areas, often those who haven't gone on to higher levels of education, we struggle with this thing called personal finance. But it ain't just us. Almost everybody struggles with it. We asked and answered the three financial literacy questions that have been tested around the world and in the U.S. Just three of them. 70% of folks can only get none, one, or two of them right. Only 30% of people get all three right. And they were related to things like understanding the time value of money or compound interest, understanding inflation, understanding risk and investing. And it's not because we don't have the aptitude or attitude to do it. Oftentimes, I know it's just because I wasn't exposed to it. If you tell me what taxes are, like, I can understand it. I just need to know. If you tell me what inflation is, I get it once you told me. I often do better when I know better. And so we talked about there's different ways we can get better with our finances. And money is, while it ain't everything, if you don't have it, it's a big thing. And also, you know, as we talk about money today, it's been from the perspective of those of us who are blessed to have at least a living wage, where we can start to entertain these ideas of what to do now. And for those of you who are struggling right now and aren't at a place where you have a living wage, aren't at a place where you even know where you're going to stay tonight, my prayers are with you, but also I plead and hope that you will, if you haven't, go get some support. Seek some free mental health and emotional health services. Seek the shelter or the community center that's there and ready to take you in. Because as Barry said, you get to give money a second chance. But I think really what Barry was talking about is that we get to give ourselves a second chance. And so for those of us who are blessed enough to have at least a living wage and can even start to have this discussion, I have five tips that have helped me over the years to start to get better when it comes to my finances and my financial literacy. And those five things are: don't listen to me. This ain't my lane. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not a stockbroker. This ain't my lane. But you should start being around, talking to, reading, watching people who know more about money than you do. 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. every Friday, you can listen to the Ash Cash Show, the financial motivator, as he talks about personal finance and topics like that on the airwaves of WHCR 90.3 FM, The Voice of Harlem, every Friday, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. You can Google the Budgetista. You can Google Wealthy Single Mom. as Naveen said, you can go out and check out the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and Daryl agrees with her. You can go to the library and check out Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. Don't listen to me. But there's people out here, this is what they do. And I'm recommending folks that I think specifically can speak to underdogs out there in a way that will get it and it can help us move forward. That's number one. Number two, get a new relationship. Today, I mean, like right now, potentially, stop listening to this show and do this right now. What's your old relationship with money? What's going to be your new relationship with money? Give money and yourself a second chance. Because it's never about the money. Number three, get a budget. Like I said, this ain't my lane, but I do know a little something about leadership development, about going from underdog to champ, and I do know one thing for sure. It's hard to know where I'm going if I don't know where I'm starting. And so get a budget. What's coming in? What's going out? How much you're spending? How much you're making? It'll probably shock you the first time you do it. But we need to know where we're starting from. Number three, be creative. I lived in a room rental for 5 years, drove an 88 Cutlass for a decade. Because I was trying to be creative about how I save money, how I lower my expenses during a time when I wasn't necessarily making that much money. But one of the ways you can do things, right? You can make more money and you can also spend less money. You can do one or the other, or you can do both. They both help. And so I get creative around how I oftentimes spend less money. And number five, negotiate. Most people's first offer, and that includes you, is never your final or best offer. You don't get what you deserve. You get what you negotiate. Get in the practice of negotiating. Somebody says they want this. You say, well, it depends. Can I have this and that too? Worst they can say is no. You'd be surprised. Might get a yes. And those are my top five things that have helped me get better with money. Don't listen to me. One. Number two, get a new relationship with money. Number three, get a budget. Number four, be creative. And number five, negotiate all the time. With that, it is time to end the show. Dang. Just a couple closing thoughts. I wanna really make sure this lands. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with us if we don't know a lot about personal finance. It's all good. A lot of us don't know a lot about personal finance. But going forward, we get to do better with it. Because I know how we roll. When we get exposed to stuff, when we get new information, we know better, we do better. So it's all good. Also, talk more about money. Not a bad thing. Money is not the root of all evil. People can be evil. Money is just a tool. Be mindful of how you use it. Be mindful of your relationship to it. Be mindful of the emotion you attach to it. But money can do wonderful things in the world. Because oftentimes it's doing wonderful things because there's wonderful people doing wonderful things with it. And then I won't say my top five again. You know the top five. And I'm grateful for the underdogs that shared some of their tips too. Like Naveen saying, check out Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Like Daryl saying, pay yourself first. Like Barry saying, give yourself and your money a second chance. And shout out to Asha, who was going to share too. Appreciate you. And with that, thank you to all the underdogs who listened today. Thank you to all the callers and the online comments. And thank you to all the folks who listen to the podcast during the week. There's new episodes that come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Podomatic. And I appreciate all the downloads. We are trending in the top 100 in the society and culture category out of thousands of podcasts because of you on Podomatic. Thank you. And shout out to the team. I don't just come in here and start talking. There's a team that helps make this happen. Shout out to Megan, my producer, and shout out to Kayla, my editor, who makes the podcast happen. Makes me look good and sound good. Appreciate you both. And as always, if you've listened to this show before, you know how I'm going to end the show. And if you can, say it along with me. I'm going to end the show with my favorite quote. Underdogs can't nobody, and I mean nobody, underdogs can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.